Mike Smith.
Who?
Yeah. Remember Mike and the puppets? Puppet
yes,
Mike.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Year ago. Almost, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, so that's sort of the history of our trip here. Yeah.
But that's a beautiful reason to come.
It is. And it's been wonderful because two things he wanted to do was to see the country and meet relatives.
Uh-huh.
And as I was saying to Teddy, the most fascinating thing is that it only takes 5 minutes and it's as if you've, you know, your whole life's been there. It's just phenomenal.
It's suddenly, it's the whole, the whole resonance of it's all consuming.
So anyway, what's the story of your life? What have you been doing?
I think I've been mostly bumbling. I've actually been trying to figure out what it is that was deemed to be something by everybody. Mostly. I find myself very perplexed about it, very puzzled about the nuances, the paradoxes of life.
Yeah.
You know, extreme paradoxes where you seem to think everything's going for you and actually there's nothing happening. You know what I mean?
And the opposite sometimes nothing's happening. And
at other times, yeah.
Yeah.
And then how it just sort of falls into place in the way society, morphs, evolves, stuff like that.
So, when you came back to South Africa, what did you do at that stage?
Well, initially, you know, like always, I'd always like gotten excited about a song or a melody or something, a harmony or anything, you know, that I'd always like to just share with close people, friends, you know, phone from California, listen to this song. My daughter does it to me now. Phone, listen. So I was quite excited about just like my ears opening to hearing sound in a different kind of way, like almost in a different, I don't know how to explain it even, right? Like hearing things in a different light, if you want to, yeah.
But you stayed within the music industry.
I left the industry, I think.
You
That's
left
actually
in.
What I did. But I left the industry, but I didn't leave music.
You didn't leave music.
Because
I heard that you had become involved, you're doing session work, you were...
I still do it. Mm. I still do the odd session work. I'd go up and help a buddy out there with a couple of things for TV,
because
things and all sorts of things.
One of the things Baz asked me to find out from you is, can you prepare a discography of recordings that you've been involved in, that you've played on, and things like that? He's done quite a lot on Ricky.
Yes, and I've seen that. It's quite extensive.
Yeah. And he said,
"I'm almost amused because I know he contacts, like for instance, a drummer who's jammed with me here and there, and I've shown him a few things over the years. Suddenly the drummer gets into a show that's travelling around and it's in Cape Town, quite big. The guitar that rocked the world, Melly, drumming, you know. And me and him met around at a festival around a campsite and he was playing a bucket.
Yeah.
And I said to him, "Hey, you should play drums." And he said, "Well, I play a bit of drums," because he was playing good.
Yeah.
And I always use him as a reference point when I'm jamming with drummers and they're not kicking it and they say, "Well, it's not my kit." And I said, "Jeez, if you're going to play a drum, you should be able to play it on a bucket." You know what I mean? If you're going to make music, you know? And that's how this guy and I met. But in Cape Town, in one of the interviews or papers, somehow his name got mentioned and he probably dropped my name saying, "Oh, I've worked with da-da-da and Steve."
Yeah.
So Buzz picked up with this email. "Please send me some info on Melly phoned me. He says, "Hey, this guy phoned me from, like, you know, wants to know about you. What's happening with his work?" I said, "Don't tell him nothing."
As Ricky says, he's got an obsession with the flames. Yeah.
It's understandable, though.
Yeah, I understand.
Ricky thinks he's nuts. Ricky thinks anyone who's got an obsession is looped.
In a way, he has an obsession too with his music.
He's obsessive about being pragmatic and what he thinks is a realist, like everybody else.
Yeah. One man's dream is another man's reality. Yeah.
And the players, while you're talking, I can understand that Restless, a version of Restless.
Actually, he sent me some bootleg stuff. which are very bad recordings.
It's terrible. I've also got.
Have you heard those?
It's so terrible. It's pathetic.
Yeah,
well,
yeah. But
it's like a happy snappy gone bad. I don't mind.
Yeah, but the point is that there comes a stage where people are looking for things like Buddy Holly things. You know, the bad tapes, and they put them together and they do something. You never know. They might be able. Yeah.
Now, all that kind of stuff, I've been hoarding it here like crazy.
Well, there are a couple of things I'm going to ask you about it. Now, my recollection is that the first recording you made was, I saw her standing there, and I can't remember what the second song was. Did it at John and Margaret Cale's studio in Berea. I can remember, because John and Margaret Cahill, I think they were. I couldn't make the session because I was at school.
And you got, where was I then?
you must know. No, you guys went
the session because I was at school. Was it like that?
but you guys went there, and because I've told the story to Tertius Lowe as well. You know Tertius?
Yes,
he said, I must give you his regards. And by the way, John McKenzie also sends his regards.
Man.
I saw John on Tuesday.
Good God.
That was the life.
Where? In Rosita? Where?
No, I went up to Marisburg, and mm-hmm. he came down, and I met him in Marisburg, and we had a snack. This is what I told you, five meals in one day.
This is where things went to put it. You know, so many people that I knew from, like, say, that era.
Mm.
I don't know if it was just the whole California experience, but it just took a direct opposite tangent to it. Most of my peers, in a funny kind of way. Yet, everybody's had an experience, you know what I mean? Mm. Everybody does have an experience. Yeah. But it seemed like I took a wrong turn somewhere there, you know what I mean? Like a radical wrong turn. John McKenzie, is the, you know, I don't know. I wish I could just, you know, socialize and just not think about things too much. And when people say things, then,
I gave him your number, so he might call you.
John McKenzie. Is he still farming?
Farming. Yeah. He's had a bit of a rough time, so he tells me that, you know.
One of your friends was near there, was it? Tony Morkel. Wasn't she living somewhere close there?
He's in Dargle. His father was very famous. They call him the Colonel, I think, but he died in about 1978, I think, 75 or 78.
He didn't farm chickens, did he? He's not the Colonel that farmed chickens.
No, not that one.
Not that famous.
Yeah, yeah. But
that's how famous I like to get.
Getting back to that, that was the first recording, and remember, they didn't release your version, they decided to release the Meteors version. And we felt that really what they did is they found that was a good song and they wanted to.
I wish I had a memory like you, Bruce. I swear.
Well, actually, I have no memory. I'm going senile slowly.
It's funny. The funny thing that we do push buttons with.
I mean, they're different things that you.
Yeah.
Like, somebody said to me, aren't you back in the recording business again? I said, I'm damn scared to go and sit in the recording studio.
Mm.
I don't think I can hear anymore. I don't think I could sense anymore. And in fact, Ricky said, no, once you're in the studio for 5 minutes, it'll all come back. But I'm scared.
And when last were you in a studio?
Well, I've been in a radio studio because I started a radio station.
I had my studio one time. I still got a 24 disc and an 8-track. I love the whole studio thing. I fell in love with that. Recording. Now, Tara has got a job in Cape Town. She left school.
You mentioned
she finished matric. A month later, she said, I'm out of your dad. And we were playing quite a lot together. Mm. And for years, I'd mulled over this separating thing, you know.
I want a recording of hers because I've heard about it.
She's got a ton of songs, eh?
Naomi has a record. She says she's got it somewhere, which she couldn't find.
Oh,
and she
good.
Searched all over. So she thinks she's lost it.
That's a recording that Tara made when she was about 13 or so.
Oh, yes.
Of stuff that she did the first time she ever went and fronted a band.
Yeah.
We should have a recording of that song.
Just gather that song that she did.
Yeah. Oh,
but I'll play her latest, if it was the studio.
Yes.
She's not got a job in the studio.
Yeah, that's what you mentioned to me.
You think that's easy?
Oh, well, I don't know.
What I wanted to ask you about as well, did George Faber ever play with the Flames?
George Faber, he did.
He did. I thought he was there with the practice sessions and then...
If he actually ever went out and gigged?
Yes. I don't recall him ever gigging.
I know that, like, hey, you got... There was another guy that I got really upset because he didn't, he just didn't fit with something to do with the music. Yeah. And I walking down Ellis Street, he was so cross. He just walked up to me and clapped me in the street. It was a friend of Pat Myers in China. I think his name was China.
Yeah, I remember China, yes.
And he was just like so volatile, just snap. Mm. Because something hadn't worked out. This is like, you know, the whole great expectation thing, and suddenly it wasn't happening. It was my fault.
So now, when you had your
Georgie Faber,
your reunion, who was in the reunion? The big
Ricky
concert.
Ricky and Ronnie and I.
Just then.
And we hired a session keyboardist and a bassist.
Yeah.
A bad. We didn't have much choice of bassists. Most of the good bassists, any town, are working. They're out of town.
Yeah.
All the good bassists you normally find, they're not. You know, they're not available.
Yeah.
So last minute crammed a bit, and then Tara also fronted some of the songs with us.
Right.
And then we had this guy from a band called Roxy Music out of England.
Yeah, Roxy, Brian Ferry.
And Phil Manzaneri, guitarist from Roxy Music.
Mm.
He came up and jammed, because him and Ricky know each other. See?
Yeah,
Phil, come and have a jam.
I heard it was quite a show.
Well, I was a bit, I tell you what, I was more scared, I think, of everybody else than Ricky and Ronnie, because I was aware that we were, having been here, that we were stuck on a bill between a woman named Busi Mshlongo, I don't know if you ever heard of her, and a guy named Hugh Masekela, Well, Busi is I think she's even more potent than Hugh Masekela in a funny kind. She is so potent as a performer, so artist. She grabs your whole everything, and you just like forced to, she's stunning. And I was worried, I thought, oh my fuck, we settled between these two giants. We're gonna have like thousands of black people here, and we're gonna come play this old shit. Sorry, really. And I'm telling Ricky, and Ricky's saying, hey man, it should be alright. You know, if we play what we're playing, whatever it is we're playing, if we do it well, it should be alright.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, but at the same time.
Totally.
Boy,
but you need that nervous tension in any case to build
it. So well, I mean, who would ever have thought that the 40, 50 year olds would have led a crowd?
Yeah.
A crowd as big as that, and as dressed and
people,
and aged.
And you know what? The funny thing was, those fat black mamas were the first ones off there. As the band kicked in, they were up there like that. It's like this big boobs, rising and flying. It was amazing.
Oh.
It's a special
family.
Not
the
special
family.
It's called Awesome Africa.
But you see, the other thing is the festival. Now, yes, politics again, it creeps in. It's not politics itself, it's the effect of the kind of propaganda that over the years has like made a reality, actually created a reality. Shongweni is a black township.
Yeah.
And it's slightly out of Durban and country. So you about 90% of the Indian population won't go there. They've got to travel like 5 km to a black township.
Yeah.
They won't go there. 90% of the Indian population would have loved to have come to that concert. It's the way it goes. And with our people as well, you know.
Yeah.
If we'd had it at Bot Gardens or somewhere like that, gee, you could have had like maybe, you know, 40,000 people. You know? But still.
Yeah.
Maybe
the other one, again, I have very vague recollections of Baby Duval being with the group.
No, with Baby I remember a lot more.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of, it seems like actually years somehow,
yeah.
sometime, because we did a lot of tours here. We played in Cape Town, right up into Namibia with Baby.
Yeah.
We did a lot of touring, a lot of fighting on the road, with all sorts of funny experience. With Baby, we were also with the Golden City Dixies, which is a whole like...
David Bessman and all.
David Bessman, all those kind
of guys. Did Danny Peterson, what is his brother?
Roy Peterson.
Yeah. Danny Butler,
Butler. That's all.
So,
Johnson's bigger brother.
I was just wondering. I thought he was the same. Because remember when we were in Port Elizabeth?
Yeah.
We were going there to the beach after the shows and.
Yes. Happy Valley.
Oh.
Good God, you remember that?
These two guys, David Bestman and Roy Peterson, they could tell we had to finish the shows about midnight, eh? And then off we'd go to the beach, and these guys would tell us jokes from the time we got there from about 1 o'clock until 5 o'clock in the morning, and never repeat a joke. That was phenomenal. They were funnier and off stage
active, eh?
Than they were on stage.
They're still active. David Bisman had the caper, name was Kennebec, was a massive chinier. And on that tour, he learned to play the trumpet, he had so many fights on that tour.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't learn to play a trumpet with a whole lot of like, I'm from Cape Town, you know what I mean?
That's you're a question. You have more faith in people than one or two.
And as a band, you know, when we did I remember one incident in Windhoek or something like that. When the Dixies weren't doing a show, the band, we played as the Flames, you know?
Yeah.
And we did this one gig, and one of the guys from the cast comes running in, ducking behind the speakers. Hey, the local town owners are after him. You spunk somewhere after him, being knife fighters. Man, I couldn't believe him. Those times, I tell you, I don't miss that part of it.
Yeah.
So vibey and so, full of life. But Jesus, my gut used to turn every time. I just used to hear those people shrieking, people open up, and these weapons were every creator. Oh, fuck, there we go again.
Yeah.
One time in Paul, I just walked up on the stage, sticking knives in the stage, and then the stand says, "Spiel kacken on vigilant." You know? Now, you're supposed to play like this. You know, you're going like this. Oh, fuck, you know? Yeah.
You get a different beat.
Hey, different beat, man. It's scary, man. Fear Plus in outside.
Yeah, I remember.
You remember a song called On the Beach?
Yes.
Fresh in the Shade.
Yes.
I'll never forget it because of that place.
Yeah.
We were playing On the Beach. And you can see from the doorway.
Yeah.
They walk past, they don't even see people at the door that's taking tickets or nothing.
Yeah.
They're like, fuck, are they walking? And as they get close, you see their pants are down there and the choppers are out. Oh. Yeah. Yeah, and they're standing there, like 8-9 of them, and they're standing there looking at
you. There was two places.
They're looking at you. They're still looking at you.
What was the other place? Katanga. Remember? That was worse than Fear Flies, wasn't it?
Hey, Fear Flies. I'll never forget that, because what happened? So we finished song. He said, spell it fear. Seven times later. Same song. Hey, no. I'll never forget those times. You know what I mean? For me, that they know. Heard the story, the song of Steve Winwood, the story of rock and roll, and it's just like that. Man.
Yeah, I brought you a CD of Australian music.
Ooh, the pop music or which?
We are going through a nostalgic time. There's a show there called "It's a Long Way to the Top." If you want to rock and roll, and it's going back to music of the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, right up to the 90s. And so I've just cut some of these. Yeah, they were the big. But the track there's a couple of tracks there that'll really interest you.
Yeah.
There's one there called "Rock and Roll." I gave you the best years of my life.
Okay.
And there's another one there called "Looking for an Echo." And they talk about where you go and you sing in the bathroom, and you go and gate crash the parties like we used to do, and you harmonise in the bathroom because they wouldn't let you in. It's sort of memories. And there was another one here too. Actually, when I read that article that you did for that magazine, what's the Durban Beat? You were interviewed for that.
The Metro magazine.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I said, "Hey, there's a song there called 'Over the Hills and Far Away.' It's about, you know, when you're young, you do all these things, and as you get older, you criticize."